Military and overseas ballots can be received, and to speed the delivery of such ballots by express mail. Pam Fessler, NPR News, Washington.
People from North Dakota to North Carolina are cleaning up today following the powerful storm system that swept across more than half of the nation this week, spawning a number of tornadoes and knocking out power to tens of thousands of homes. One of the twisters touched down near Cedar Grove, North Carolina, where Bobby James told WTVD-TV it made a mess of the property his family has spent a lifetime developing.
They blew debris all into ponds, and my mother's garage is damaged, the roof of the house is damaged. It's going to take a whole lot of work.
There's also tornado damage in Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio. Conditions have improved today, though, in the Dakotas, where roadways were covered with ice and snow yesterday. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Ally Bank, offering sleeping money alerts to notify customers when their money could be doing more. Learn more at allybank.com.
Need to know more about the candidates you'll be voting on November 2nd? Make Illinois Public Media's Election 2010 website your next stop. You can find in-depth interviews with the candidates, hear their positions on the issues, and get more information on the election. It's all at our website, will.illinois.edu. It's another service to keep you informed from WILL, Illinois Public Media.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Burlingame Home Inspection and Performance. Burlingame performs property inspections along with energy audits and ratings for Energy Star, tax credits, and efficiency mortgages, all utilizing infrared technology. More information is at cusaveenergy.com or 217-649-1173.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In this first hour of the show, we'll be talking about how children acquire language, maybe looking at the path that early language development takes, talking a little bit about what can sometimes go wrong as children learn language, and maybe also suggest some techniques that parents particularly can use to help children who are at high risk for language problems. And we have, as our guest on the program, someone who is an expert in language disorders in children, Marianne Romsky. She's professor in communication and associate dean in the College of Arts and Sciences at Georgia State University, and she specializes in speech-language pathology. She is visiting the campus and spending time talking with faculty and students, and she'll also be giving a talk. This is the Goldstick Family Lecture in the Study of Communication Disorders. That's taking place this afternoon at 4 o'clock in the iHotel. That's at 1900 South 1st in Champaign. And it's something that is open to the public, so anybody who is interested can stop by. As she's talking particularly about toddlers and things that parents can do that also involve assistive devices, I guess, maybe you would want to call it, to help kids in their language development. And that's one of the things that I expect that we'll probably talk about that I think is really interesting, the ways that now technology is offering some assistance to kids who are having difficulty with their language development. So as we talk, questions are certainly welcome if you'd like to call in, and I know the guest will do her best to answer your question. 333-9455 is the local number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. And we do also have email, so if you'd like to send in your question that way, you can do that, and that's will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome.
Glad to be here. Is it possible to maybe just in really kind of general terms talk a little bit about language development, or at least how it gets started? What are the expected major points that you go through?
When children are born and they're sort of ready to learn language, and they have lots of experiences during their first year of life that set them up to begin to speak. Usually children start talking around the age of 12 months. Maybe you hear a child say dada or mama or another favorite word, something that motivates them, car. I know another child I know who said key as their first word because they were interested in cars.
And they wanted the keys.
Right, and they wanted the keys then. So So during that first year, there's lots of things that parents provide a lot of input, social input and spoken input to the child as they're developing. Clearly, when you see a young child, a baby taught with his parent, oftentimes you see the and you hear the social interaction and the parent talking, even though the child's not necessarily initially responding, but they're taking it all in. And by the time they're 12 months and they're saying their first word, they already are what we would call intentional. They know how to communicate. They know that they could point to something and mommy might give it to them. So point to the cookie in the jar and mommy would give it, or wind up, you know, pointing to a toy they want and getting it, vocalizing, but not a word, but a vocalization like, ah, or with the gesture that they use. And they understand that doing that can get them what they want. And then they also simultaneously start to understand what words mean. So they know that if mommy says, get me the shoe, they might go pick up the shoe from among the shoe and a boot and something else on the floor. And together, that understanding of language and the ability to become intentional and know that you can get things by vocalizing and pointing set up the stage for first words and the child starting to say their first words. And so those are really things that happen to begin with to get language moving. Yeah. And in that second year, the children start very slowly, have a few words. And again, I'm talking sort of what the mean child does as opposed to every individual child, because there's certainly a very broad range of when a child starts to talk and when and how soon it is or how late it is. But during that second year, children add words and they add them at different rates. And then they get to the point where they have what people call a growth spurt and they get a lot more vocabulary. And that's really when they take off and they start really just talking. And it seems to be a very natural behavior for children who are typically developing.
Yeah. I guess it is the case that if you raised a child in total silence, would they ever learn to talk? Is that so important that they hear speech that they are spoken to?
Well, you know, there's sort of a natural experiment in that sense, in that children who are raised by deaf parents who are not deaf still learn to talk. And usually there are other people in the environment that they are hearing speech from, and also that they are hearing from the TV and from other outside sources, they're hearing speech. Mm-hmm. A child who is deaf from birth, however, probably babbles a bit and starts putting sounds together, but then after about 6 months of age stops doing that because they're not getting the input. So those are two sort of different examples of why the input is definitely plays a role in from the disordered population of why having input is important.
Yeah. I think it's a really interesting idea, interesting point, and maybe it's something that parents certainly know, is that it seems that children have some level of understanding of what's being of what we're trying to communicate to them before they can really do much to communicate back what they want. Is that something that is almost there at the point when they are born, or at some level is there when they're born?
Well, you know, we don't really know that. We do know there are a few studies that looked at parents who were reading to children in the womb, and that indeed afterwards those children seem to have a propensity towards those certain words and the mother's voice, really. So the mother's voice rather than the specific words. And so there is some sense that from the very beginning, the child is taking in information. And you're right, the very, very young child doesn't have a way to tell you what they know, to let you see inside them. But then all of a sudden, they start communicating. And it's certainly well before their first words that you have the sense, you know, they might have a dirty diaper and they're, you know, making some really, you know, sound that's indicating that, you know, they're
this
not
is
happy.
Most unpleasant.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And or it might be something very exciting to them and they're vocalizing. And so you start to see this. Clearly, parents always talk about the interaction and the back and forth that there is and the sense that the child is engaging you and you're engaging the child even though they're not saying words.
Hmm. Well, that I suppose that people wonder, well, it seems natural that I'm going to talk to my child. Even if they can't talk back or if they're just making random sounds or maybe they seem like I can tell they're happy, they're sad. Is there something that they're trying to get through to me? But anyway, so I'm going to talk to them. But I'm sure that some people would say, well, does the way that you talk to them matter? And is it going to make a difference to their language development if I talk to them like I would talk to an adult or that we do that thing we do with babies and we baby talk to them? Mm-hmm. And I suppose some people would say, well, you know, don't do that. Pronounce words correctly. Speak in complete sentences. Mm-hmm. Do those things that you would do if you were talking to an adult. And they might make the argument, well, wouldn't that be better for their language development to do that than to do the other? Does it make a difference?
I don't think it makes a difference. Yeah. And I think that we have actually the propensity as adults to use baby talk, to talk to a younger child in more simplified language. And baby talk is sort of not really that's the word that's used. But motherese is a word that's been used to describe that, where the mom is talking in a way that's simplified, not, you know, full 10-word grammatical sentences, but more like two or three or four words with some intonation. And, of course, you're always accompanying that with gesture and your facial expression and whatever you do as a communicator, but it doesn't seem that is a negative thing in terms of development. The children develop just fine, and there's actually also studies that suggest that older children will talk to younger children that way too. So that you seem to be, we have this ability to understand that somebody is more of a novice at the activity and that you're simplifying to make sure they get it and move on. And that goes away fairly rapidly for most in most families. It's not it's not something that lingers. In some cases it might linger, and then that might be a different situation. But in general, I don't think it's an issue.
So truly it doesn't make any difference between whether you're saying to your child, I've just made a wonderful fresh batch of fabulous chocolate chip cookies that I know you like. Would you like one? There's no difference between that and want cookie?
Well, you know, I think you probably get the child's attention more with want cookie than you do with a long, long sentence. But it doesn't suggest that talking in the more simplified version, which is what most people do. The literature really says most people do simplify their language and use what we would call motherese or baby talk to younger children, that it doesn't have a negative effect and the child learns to talk.
Yeah. I think that some people have experimented with using things, and I guess the one thing that I really know that I've have read about is sign, American sign, with children who are at the point where they can't communicate very effectively. They're not at that point where they can really tell what they want. Mm-hmm. But and although I'm sure sometimes maybe they're frustrated because they know what they want, but they just can't quite get it across. Mm-hmm. And someone said, well, you know, you can actually teach them sign, and that they're capable of learning it and capable of using it and communicating that way at a point before they can actually start talking in, you know, the way that we are. Mm-hmm. Is there anything to that, and does that really do anything for the child?
Well, there's two things there. I think the reason the child potentially could learn the sign earlier than they could learn a spoken word is because motorically, the oral motor mechanism is more complicated than the manual mechanism, though the manual mechanism for sign is not uncomplicated. But then there's some empirical literature, some studies that suggest that baby signs is what people – there's some empirical work and studies that suggest that the child will learn this earlier and use it until they have the spoken word, and then it will drop out. And that has resulted in – and that's pretty – it's limited, but there's scientific evidence there. But that's resulted in a real – what I call popularized culture of videos and all kinds of things that parents can buy to teach their children sign. And in some environments, it's been used as, well, my child is smarter because they too can learn to sign. And I'm not sure that nobody's shown that there's a real difference, that if you have the child sign first, that they will talk sooner or anything like that. What you have is really, it's what you want is the child to communicate. And if the child can communicate with the sign and the adults understand it, then the child can communicate maybe a little sooner, but not that much sooner. The time is not that much. But there's definitely been this popularized culture, and there are a lot of parents, probably more upper middle class parents, mm-hmm. who will buy these videotapes and focus on teaching their child to sign and gesture that way to advance their language development or show that they're more advanced. I'm not sure that there's a lot of empirical literature behind that to really support it. And, you know, I mean, gesture is a natural part of our communication system. You can't see me on the radio, but I am gesturing now while I'm talking, and most people do. So gestures play an important role, but the idea that they're going to advance the child's early language development that much, I from my view, that it's still out there, and I'm not clear that it's really supporting it. Mm-hmm.
Our guest in this hour of focus, Marianne Romsky. She is professor in communication and associate dean in the College of Arts and Sciences at Georgia State University. And she's a specialist in the speech development of children and some of the difficulties that kids can have in developing their language skills. And she is here on the campus to give a talk. This is the Gold Stick Family Lecture in the Study of Communication Disorders. That's this afternoon on the campus. And anybody who's interested can stop by. That's at the I Hotel this afternoon at 4. And here on the program, questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. When children do babble, when they start mm-hmm. doing babbling, and they're just seems that they're playing with the sounds, mm-hmm. Either because they're just getting them down how to make them, or maybe it's just fun, or you know whatever it is, that parents will repeat them back.
Mm-hmm.
And is that good, bad, or just it's not really neither one of the other?
I think it's just fine. I don't think it's good or bad. I mean, it gives the child another model for mm-hmm. the sounds. But the child's really playing with sounds and learning how to use their oral mechanism to produce the sounds.
So that really is – it's practicing how mm-hmm. just how to make those sounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because then those sounds are the things that are going to get stuck together later to make words.
And there is a developmental progression mm-hmm. to – which sounds emerge earlier and which sounds emerge later. So the ba-ba-ba would be sound – a B would be a sound that would emerge much earlier uh-huh. than like a S, an S, things like that. So there is a progression there. But in babbling, the child is really babbling a range of different sounds. And the parent babbling back is not – I don't think it would hurt the yeah. child.
Well, clearly there are some sounds that because of the way that you have to arrange your lips mm-hmm. and your teeth and mm-hmm. your tongue and the way that you have to place everything, mm-hmm. some are a lot more difficult
yes.
to make than others.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that the ones that are the easiest to make, mm-hmm. those are the ones that they're going to do
right.
first.
Right. And so why you have a child who says a ball or ba, or baba for bottle, or mama, or dada. Those are earlier developing sounds, and they're what you would call in the speech world that sort of fronted sounds. Those certainly are much simpler for the child to produce than more sophisticated sounds. Though early on when the child is learning to babble, they babble a whole range of sounds. But then they really focus in on a development of those sounds in to put them together into words.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller in Indiana to talk with. Let's do that. Someone on our toll-free line. It's 9 number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'd like for you to say something, if you could, in a general way, about those individuals who do not have a family, who are perhaps raised in foster homes or some orphanage, or some family member takes them over and they get passed around. I was wondering whether or not you have empirical data that talks about that. I'd have a lot of anecdotal data from my family, for example, about things. And I was just wondering, oftentimes, you talked about the motor mechanisms. They're sort of set, ready to go, and things have to be done at that time. And if they're not, I wonder if them being displaced like that would give difficulty for the child who doesn't have what we'd say the regular family upbringing. If you could talk about that in any way, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay.
I think the language environment, I've sort of been talking about parents, but it really is whoever the adults are in the language environment. And variability in the language environment is okay. And if the child is going to develop typically, then various family members or even caregivers outside of the family would be providing that kind of input. So I don't necessarily think that that is negative for a child. There are some studies that have looked at children who were raised in orphanages in Eastern Europe, some of those situations that were there a while ago. And there certainly are delays because those children had a lack of stimulation in general and a lack of spoken input and stimulation. So I would see a family with other caregivers and even daycare kinds of situations as being an environment in which spoken language is provided to the child, while an orphanage kind of environment being very different and much more restrictive. And the studies certainly support that the children have some difficulty.
Yeah, I think those are sort of famous kind of
yes.
studies where you look at children who were raised in what you might call an impoverished
yes.
environment
mm-hmm.
in the sense that their basic needs were mm-hmm. taken care of. They were mm-hmm. fed. They were changed. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of stuff was done. But in terms of real quality interaction with adults, they had really very little. People
mm-hmm.
didn't really play with them. They didn't hold
mm-hmm.
them. They didn't talk to them. And clearly those kinds of kids have some really serious kinds of deficits.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that I suppose though that does argue for the fact that the richer kind of environment
mm-hmm.
that you can in with all kinds of stimulus
mm-hmm.
that you can provide for the child, better off child's going to
yes,
be.
Yes, definitely, mm-hmm. and at the same time, it takes a lot of variability or extreme environment to really. Totally negatively affect a child's development. The child might not have as an enriched environment, might not have as diverse a vocabulary if they grew up in a impoverished environment generally, but they would still learn language. It takes a lot for them to not begin to talk.
This question just sort of occurs to me. Maybe it's sort of out of left field, but is there any evidence to show that being exposed to music has any kind of impact on language learning?
Not that I know
of,
but there might be. I don't know the answer to that. It's an interesting question, though. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, other questions here are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You also may email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we're talking here with Marianne Romsky. She is professor in communication and also associate dean in the College of Arts and Sciences at Georgia State University. She's an expert in language disorders in children. Well, maybe we can talk about when things don't go according to plan, and we're not just talking about the normal range of difference from one child to another, but when they're really when there are serious problems with language development. Why does that happen?
It happens for a lot of reasons. Some we know, and some we don't know. Clearly, there are some children who have disorders that are what are known as specific language impairments that are specific to language with no other difficulties in their development. And it's difficult at this point for us to know what causes that, though there are now some genetic studies that are suggesting that there's potentially a genetic component to this, but still not not fully developed yet. Otherwise, there is certainly a range of disorders that occur either prior to birth or during birth that result in a range of developmental problems, developmental disabilities that would affect a child's speech and language development. So children with intellectual disabilities, children who have some form of brain damage that occurs at birth, genetic disorders like Down syndrome, something that is much more visible right now, autism, all may cause language disorders and may result in significant difficulties in learning how to talk and learning language. And then there's also another a set of causes that I would call acquired, where children start to develop normally and they either are in some kind of accident and have some brain damage that occurs, a traumatic brain injury. Might you know, fall off a bike, not have a helmet on, a range of things like that, be hit by a car, have a stroke for a range of reasons that can also occur. So there's things that occur like at birth or before birth, and then there's things that could occur after the child has developed language and loses some of it or some pieces of it due to some insult that occurs during their life experience.
Well, does it is it more the case that children who are having difficulties, they you would say on one level they know what they want to say, but somehow that they just can't get the sound – they can't put the sounds together in a way that means something to somebody else, or that actually at the level of processing, they can't even – it's not that it's in there and it can't get out, but that at the level of what's happening in the brain where they're trying to put together the sounds, that it doesn't – that doesn't even really come together right there.
I think it's all – could be all of those things, from the child who really has trouble with – producing the sounds of the language to the child who has trouble processing the information. There's a very wide range of children who have different disorders. They would move into different disorder categories. I would differentiate the children who understand some language but can't produce it from those children who have difficulty understanding and producing language. And then what's causing that, we're still really the studies are still out on what's really causing this to happen. Clearly, with new technologies that allow brain imaging as well as genetic testing and all, we're beginning to discover a bit more about what might lead to some of these disorders and why they're happening. But we still have a long way to go in that area. But we still have children who have difficulty learning to communicate, whether it's that they can't put – they have words but they can't put them together into sentences, or whether they don't have any words and they don't understand words either.
For given again, given the, that children develop at different rates, mm-hmm. and that each child is different, and while we present parents with charts and graphs, and right. we say at this point child should be doing this, and at this point child should be that's based on a sort of generalizing all kids together, and, mm-hmm. and different children develop at different rates. But are there particular things that you should say parents should be looking out for, just to see that their kids are pretty much on track? Mm-hmm. Because I know one of the points that you would make, I'm sure, is that intervention, you want to get it
early
as possible. Mm-hmm. So if there is a problem, you want to mm-hmm. be onto it as early as possible. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure that also what you would say is that, you know, if parents have some kind of concerns, mm-hmm. that the kids need to be evaluated mm-hmm. by someone like you mm-hmm. to try to figure out what exactly is going on. Mm-hmm. But what would be something that you would suggest parents to be thinking about or maybe concerned about if they saw it?
Well, at first, if the child isn't by 9 to 12 months really becoming intentional as a communicator, mm-hmm. trying to communicate whether they can talk or not, and then how much they understand of the words about them. So if you say, go get mommy's shoe, they could get it. They could get the shoe. Or, you know, early on, games that people play with their children are, you know, show me your lips, show me your teeth, show me your head. If children can't do that, those are the starts of having some difficulty. Actually, the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association has a wonderful, it's a brochure and a chart that I think it's called How Does My Child Learn to Talk? And it has at different age points from birth to, I think, 6 months and then 6 to 12 months, first year, second year, third year, fourth year, understanding and expression. And it has about 4 items under each area that will point you to things you should check off. And if you check off too many, that you should see a specialist. The other thing I would say to parents is that if they think something's not right, they should check it out, because their instincts are probably right. Even though they might not want to and they're afraid, they should try, because even if what they get is no, it's okay, you know, give it another 6 months, see how the child does, that's better than waiting and not starting to figure out what's going on and getting help as early as possible. Because we know that it's better to try to prevent more serious difficulties than to have to correct them later on.
Yeah. We have some other callers here, and in fact, the lines are full. So let's talk with some of these folks here. Spring Bay is the first in line on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
You were just starting to sort of touch on the question that I was going to ask. I remember years ago my daughter was just kind of at the noun stage and playing in the kitchen. I turned around, I gave her something. I said, put this in the garbage. She walked right over and put it in the garbage. There's no way she could have ever spoken that at that mm-hmm. point in time. So the question, I guess, is how much sooner do children start to develop the ability to understand before they can actually speak? And I'll hang up and listen off the phone. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
That's a great question. They probably start to understand single words probably 9 to 12 months, right before they're starting to talk. Probably by about the time they're 12 months old, on average, they might understand about 50 words in context. So just the example you gave, your child putting something in the garbage when all of that was around and you were in the kitchen, in that environment. But then once the child starts to talk, comprehension keeps proceeding, understanding keeps proceeding along with their ability to produce the language. And it tends to be a little bit ahead always, but sometimes you have different kids who catch up and start producing just as much as they understand. But that understanding starts a little bit earlier, and to me is one of the critical things I look for, because I think a child who understands is at a different point than a child who really has no understanding in that early process.
Do you know, parents also, I'm sure, do this thing where they spend time naming objects and showing it and you know, they have a ball and they show the kid, ball, this is the ball, as if to say, get it? that sound that I'm making goes with this thing in a very deliberate sort of way. Mm-hmm. And while I'm sure that that's not bad, I wonder, well, is that really necessary, or do they somehow more at some point, are they really, even if you don't make a big point of that, are they going to start to get the idea that a certain sound that you make goes with this thing?
Mm-hmm. And they do. And that's really the start of learning that all these objects, we would call them reference in the environment, get paired with a word. Mm-hmm. And that word is what you use to get what you want initially, early on, that noun. But later on, it gets more complex and more sophisticated and develops. But early on, it's that relationship between the word and the thing in the environment. And I think that whether the parent is deliberate in doing that or it just happens in the natural context, the child is a very adept learner, the typical child. And they pick that up very quickly.
Even if you don't make a big point.
You don't make a big point of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Next caller is in Urbana. Line one, hello.
Hi, thanks for the program. Interesting thing came up just yesterday. I was speaking to a friend and her, I think she's like between 4 and 5 years old. She said that she's going to a speech therapist. And I said, oh, that's interesting because she's not enunciating well enough. And she said, yeah, she's a very poor eater. And that is what led to it, the person said. And I thought, huh. And she said, yeah, because, you know, if she doesn't eat and, you know, I guess masticating and then moving things around in her mouth with her tongue, things don't get developed as quickly as they should. And I thought, wow, that makes sense, but I'd never heard of that before. Could you speak a little bit about that?
So I think early on in development, clearly when we were talking about the oral motor mechanism and the speech mechanism, using all the tongue and the lips and teeth and the palate and all the anatomical features and using them, physically using them, you also use those for eating. And so it's possible that could be the reason. I'm not sure we have direct evidence of the exact link, but certainly it makes sense. And if the child had difficulties, particularly severe difficulties, that would happen. I'm not sure if they were mild difficulties that would be the case. But certainly that's a possibility.
Well, that I suppose that gets to the question, if a child is clearly having difficulties forming some sounds.
Mm-hmm.
But that otherwise the child is intelligible, you can understand what she's saying to you, but that you know, she sounds like Elmer Fudd. And so at what point do you think, well, I wonder whether it would be worth having some speech therapy just to help the speech be more clear, or do you say, well, either that's okay the way it is, or you say, well, that probably will sort itself out?
Well, there's certainly so here we're talking about speech sound development issues, not language issues. If we're just talking about the production of speech, they can be related. They certainly often have speech problems and language problems, but here we're talking about a speech problem. And the development of sounds, clearly there's a progression, as we talked about earlier. But the idea that you would want to have those sounds produced within that developmental window, and if they go at all outside that developmental window, that you would immediately want to have that corrected and work on those speech sounds would be very important, because very quickly the incorrect productions become routine or routinized, and you don't want to have that routinized incorrect production. Mm-hmm. So again, it's sort of the earlier the better, though that's not necessarily what always happens, but the earlier the better.
Just real quick, I want to introduce again the guest, Marianne Romsky. She's professor in communication and associate dean in the College of Arts and Sciences at Georgia State University. She's an expert in language disorders in children. She's here visiting the campus to give a talk and was good enough to come and spend a little time with us to talk generally about language development in children. And questions are welcome. And do you have a couple of people here who are in line. Others are welcome. We'll do as many as we can. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. And the next person here is someone on a cell phone. I believe they're in Champaign and line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Dean Rumsky. I had two real quick questions. They're kind of related, and you started to touch on the first one, but so the first question is, our daughter's just turned four, and she tends not to, I think, enunciate very well. And I don't know how to even explain this, but so English is not the first language of my spouse, and mm-hmm. and I was wondering if that may be an effect of it. And related to that was, she actually seemed to speak a lot later than most of the kids in her peer age. But she's definitely caught up, and she's like a chatterbox now. And I was just wondering if you had any comments on that.
So when children are learning two languages, I'm assuming now that your daughter was exposed to two languages.
Yes.
They both sometimes it looks like development is delayed, but it really isn't because the child is trying to process the two languages. That might be why you had a little bit of what appeared to be a little slower or learning a little later. But the child is really learning two languages simultaneously, not as we would, like in my experience, I learned a second language in high school, which, of course, I didn't do very well in. When you learn very early and you learn two languages, you're really integrating them. And sometimes you have, I bet she had vocabulary in one and not in another, or she mixed the vocabulary up in the different languages. That can happen. And the speech sound piece might be that she's processing two languages that might have different – each speech sound is called a phoneme, that just might have different phonemes, and thus one is more difficult for her than the other at that point. You might want to talk to a speech language pathologist, but if she's doing okay, it's your choice. But two languages are definitely the child is learning simultaneously, and they can do it very well at a very young age.
Okay, that seems to help. Well, it's kind of a follow up. I try to correct her a lot. And she's very attentive to it and seems to, you know, she can repeat what I say if I slow down for her and try to enunciate. And then later she'll enunciate too much. And I hope that's not a problem. Like she doesn't say yes. She says yes and, like, really make sure she tags that S on at the end, because I used to have trouble telling if she was saying yeah and nah, because she was kind of not really letting me know. And now she's like, yes.
I think she's just responding to you, and you're wanting to hear the clarity of that final S on the word. So it sounds like she's being responsive.
Well, good. Well, thank you very much. Right. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I'll go on here to someone in Savoy. This is line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm still concerned about my daughter, born in 1957, who was diagnosed in school on one of those survey tests as having a lisp, but it was considered slight, and so that there was no referral to any speech pathologist. And then even in high school, it seemed like it was negative on any of her speech remarks and so on. And I'm wondering if something could have been done, or what the strategy would have been.
I think, again, you're talking about a speech sound disorder. That's what a lisp is. And it's substituting one sound for another. And it sounds like that suggested that it was mild. She could have had speech therapy. My guess is that now it would be very difficult to correct that. That certainly she could have had that. Sometimes school systems don't treat children for the mildest disorders because they have a caseload of children with much more severe disorders. And it's hard for me to say what might have been the case there. But I think that it's hard. I'm not sure what would be done now.
So nowadays you would certainly suggest that people proceed to get a speech therapist.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right.
You're
very
welcome.
Good. Thank you. We have maybe about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus. Someone has a question they want to call in. They can do that, but they need to do that pretty quick so we can get them in. Something that I expect that you will be talking about this afternoon, maybe we can talk a little bit about that I think is really interesting, is the fact that now because of technology, there are some devices that are available to help children who have difficulty with communication, particularly have difficulty speaking, and that there are now some quite sophisticated pocket-sized or easily portable devices that can be very helpful, and that kids who have difficulty communicating with their peers or their parents can be right in the thick of it with these kind of devices. And apparently they're quite helpful, and it's quite acceptable. I guess the other kids don't think that somehow, if they have a peer that uses an iPod to talk, that's okay with them. Apparently, that works just well. This really swell for everybody.
Well, the the advancement of technology has really helped children who have pretty severe disorders of speech and language, who have problems that they're not talking, and that's the area in which my research is in, and. I have used devices that talk, computers that talk, and they have over the years been very big and cumbersome and moved very quickly down to being the size of a small laptop computer for a child to use. And as you said, right now, today, I'm going to show this this afternoon, there are programs, apps for iPad and iPhone that and iPod that will let you access the technology. The thing I want to say, though, is that the technology, while its development is wonderful, is really a tool, and you still have to have the language skills developed to be able to use the tool and use the vocabulary that's on the technology. So the technology has to be paired with speech and language interventions early on to help the child develop the words they need, because they don't have the words, and use them on the technology. So I totally agree with you that the outcome and the future is just amazing of what can happen. But the technology is only a tool to be used with the child learning vocabulary and interaction skills to communicate, and developing those skills with the technology. And the technology does just what you said, which is make it so that the child looks less different, looks more normal, because everybody's using the technology today. I think to me that's the change that there's been that's been so exciting, is that the child doesn't look so different. Because even with a computer, they still look a little different, especially if they have a program on it that looks different. With the apps on the iPhone and the iPad, that might not be the case. And it can be integrated into the social world of the child with their friends and in great ways. And it's accepted as a way to communicate, as opposed to being something very different. And it makes the child stand out. It really, the child gets integrated, and in fact might be very popular because they have this very interesting piece of technology. But it is a tool that has to be used in combination with everybody in the environment learning how to communicate with the child and how the child learning how to use the technology so that they can communicate.
Yeah. Just recently, I think we were all struck by an article that appeared in the New York Times about how many toddlers mm-hmm. had become attached to their parents' iPhones.
Yes, yes, I did see it.
Mm-hmm. And it was I thought it was a fascinating story. Some about it, you know, makes you sort of wonder that, you know, mom's wondering, okay, where's the phone?
Right.
And they find out that the kids have it because because it's pretty easy to pick it up and figure out how to use it. That in fact that in some cases maybe also some parents have, you know, to sort of keep their kids occupied. You know, you can punch up YouTube and they can have Mickey Mouse on the iPod and they're small enough they can hold it. Now, also I think officially a few years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics came along and said, well, we really don't think that kids under two should be watching a lot of television. So now you start wondering, well, okay, if kids are going to, as soon as they can hold it and work it, and apparently that's pretty early, start fooling around with iPods and iPads and who knows what, is that, and, you know, given that that may be good exposure to images and sounds and music and speech and things like that. On the other hand, you have to wonder, now, is this, are there any issues here that we should really be concerned about if kids are going to be using various kinds of slates and handheld computing devices and other computers starting at a very young age?
I think that's an excellent point. And I know my niece, 13 years ago now, wound up using a big device to access her mother's computer, one of those rolling things. And at a year, she was playing with software, you know, kid software on the computer. And I think that today we're even advanced from that we don't know what the effects of this are on children's development in general, how it changes how they develop, how they learn, how they take in information, and that those are all things that are still unknowns, but that there probably is some effect on development. Whether it's a negative or a positive effect or neutral, we don't know. But we certainly are going to have to pay attention to it because it's going to change how kids – I think how kids learn. I think even today's college students have a different view of how you access information than clearly I did many years ago. So I think there's lots of differences, and it's a very exciting time, but it's one that we have some unknowns about.
Well, we're coming to the point here we have to finish up. I do, however, want to mention to folks who are here in and around Champaign-Urbana that our guest, Marianne Romsky, will be giving a talk this afternoon on the campus. This is the Goldstick Family Lecture in the Study of Communication Disorders. She'll be talking on the topic Toddlers, Parent-Implemented Augmented Language Interventions, and Communication Development. So essentially things we've just been talking about. But particularly the kinds of things that parents can do for their kids.
And how parents can be integrated into interventions.
And that's this afternoon at 4 o'clock. This takes place at the I Hotel, 1900 South First Street. And anybody who is interested in hearing more from our guest should feel welcome to stop by. Marianne Romsky is professor in communication and associate dean in the College of Arts and Sciences at Georgia State. Thanks. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
WILL programs are made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store. Strawberry Fields offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
We'll take a break at this point, as we usually do, so we can bring you an update on the markets. We'll have some news from National Public Radio. Then we'll have more Focus, so stay tuned.
Agricultural information on WILL is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets, where soft red winter wheat as well as the hard red winter continue to rally in Kansas City and Chicago, double-digit increases in both marketplaces today. Let's look at particulars in Kansas City. December wheat at 768.5, up 14.5. March, 784.5, up 15. December wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade at 719, up 16.25. March, 757.25, up 15.